Hello, fellow true crime lovers. Welcome to another episode of Dimes of Crime. I'm your host, Richa.
And I'm Haley.
Well, what are you drinking, Haley?
I'm drinking a Bullet Old Fashioned.
Oh, nice. I'm going to be drinking water because our main sewer pipe is clogged. Not that anyone wants to know about that, but that means our toilets aren't working. So Drew and I have to hold our pee until tomorrow morning.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. Hopefully someone will be here in the morning to unclog the main sewer lines. Luckily, our child is still in diapers, so we don't have to worry about a third person who can't hold their bladder.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, what about, like, they don't pay for a hotel for you to go to during that stuff?
So it's not that she didn't want to come and help us today. It's just that Leo was already in bed. I mean, we literally discovered it as we were putting Leo down for bed. And so if she came today, and we always have the option to going to my parents. But again, we'd have move Leo and my cat's here, and it'd just be a lot. The easier option is just to not use the bathroom. And so we're hoping that someone will come here early morning and help us get it fixed. So let's see. We'll see if that happens. So I'm drinking water.
So you don't have to pee so often.
Sparsely. Yeah, wine would just make it worse, right? So
yeah,
both Drew and I really wanted a drink, but we were both like
yeah, I was like, you guys need a drink, but yeah. I feel that. All right, well, let's jump into this episode.
Yeah, disclaimers still apply. There is some pretty gruesome talk in this one, and so if you're not listening to us on headphones, put us on headphones and be courteous of people who don't like true crime, or just like underage kids that would not want to listen to this stuff. And all of my case sources will be listed in the description of the episode if you guys are curious. I know this case has been very much in the news or media lately because Netflix just came out with a documentary called The Thing About Pam. And so for spoiler alert, I'm doing my case on Pamela Hupp. And so, yeah, let's just jump into it.
Yeah, I haven't watched that, so it'll be all new to me.
I haven't watched it either, but I had heard of Pamela Hupp on other podcast episodes, especially Dateline. Dateline, I think, has a whole mini series on podcasts on her. So if you're curious about more detail, go and listen to that. I think that's much more informative than the Netflix documentary. Again, I haven't watched the Netflix docuseries, but I always like Dateline's coverage of things. So, and they're a huge source on this case for us as well.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
They're actually what inspired the Netflix docuseries. Anyways, so this story starts on December 27th, 2011. It started off pretty usual for the Faria family. Russ Faria went to work, then spent the evening with friends and was texting with his wife, Betsy. He picks up dog food along the way home, and he also tried to call his wife, Betsy, but she didn't pick up. But he didn't really think much of it because she told him earlier that day that she wasn't really feeling her best and that she needed to rest. So she was like, he was like, okay, probably she's just in bed or whatever. So he walks in the door without really, you know, thinking anything was wrong. He drops the dog food in the garage and then calls out for his wife, Betsy, and then wanders into the living room. And that's when he saw his wife. Betsy was crouched on the ground next to their sofa, surrounded by Christmas presents from 2 days earlier and in a pool of blood. The blood was so dark, it looked black. As Russ collapsed next to her, screaming and crying for his wife, he noticed that she had a knife sticking out of her neck and extremely deep gashes on her wrists. Yeah, it's very sad. 2 days after Christmas. In his disbelief, he called 911. And as he's huffing and puffing, he says, I quote, I just got home from my friend's house and my wife killed herself, end quote. Now, I will say that was a very odd statement for Russ to make. There was clearly a knife sticking like out of her neck, and she clearly had what looked like defensive wounds on her body, which we will also learn later that she was stabbed 55 times.
Holy shit, that's a lot of times.
55, yeah.
Usually, like, so, when there's a lot of stabs like that, it's out of anger.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into that. So, again, a weird note, why would Russ say she killed herself? That's just like a weird thing to say on a 911 call. And if you are really curious about the 911 call and think that I'm just making it up, the Dateline episodes cover this in detail. There's audio of him saying exactly that. And I did quote it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So why would Russ say she killed herself? It's particularly odd to me, but we'll come back to that. And so will the police.
Right. Like, how do you stab yourself 55 times?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess he doesn't know, right? There's a lot of blood. There could be a lot of explanations.
But again, still, kill, a stab
you,
yourself
you
in your neck.
You see a pool of blood. Yeah, you see a pool of blood and you see the knife in her neck. And my first thought wouldn't be she killed her. I just wouldn't say that on the 911 call. It's just a weird note. I would just say, you know, I just got home and...
911 calls are, like, super telling. Like, a lot of times, like during a 911 call, you can tell a lot in that little moment, you
I
know?
Guess
like,
so this case happening. Goes it's actually very interesting just on 911 calls alone versus all the other stuff that happens in this. But yeah, it's just a weird note to me. Like, if I came home and saw this terrible scene, I wouldn't say my wife killed herself or my significant other killed themselves, you know? Like, I would be, oh my god, send help.
Yeah, totally.
You know, my husband or whoever is hurt. I wouldn't, like, make conclusions about what happened. You know what I mean? It's just odd to me. So anyways, Elizabeth, also known as Betsy Faria, was born on March 24th, 1969, and she lived a fairly simple life. Friends and family said that she was a super cool, unique, and fun to be around person. Her mom said that she had started DJing at 17 years old, maybe earlier, and she had always great parties. After having two daughters, she met and married Russell Faria, and the four of them built a life together in Troy, Missouri, which is a town about an hour drive northeast of St. Louis, where Betsy also worked at a State Farm office. Betsy, at the time of her death, had a breast cancer relapse. According to sources, Betsy was a cancer survivor. She had actually fought this horrible disease with chemo before, but it just kind of came back. And this time, the doctors unfortunately said that she had about 3 to 5 years left. But she was determined to enjoy life. Betsy and Russ actually went on a what they called celebration of life cruise in November 2011. This is just a month before Betsy's murder, by the way, where they swam with dolphins. This was one of Betsy's dreams, and Russ really wanted her to enjoy everything in life before she had died. However, Betsy had threatened to kill herself before. She'd even been hospitalized for doing so. And Russ knew that she'd struggled with her terminal diagnosis. I mentioned this because it helps explain why Russ might have jumped
why
to the conclusion of suicide. Yeah. So when the police question Russ, they say, I quote, Russ, your wife was stabbed 25 times at least, and the police are still counting, end quote. After hearing this, Russ was obviously shocked, and the police even prefaced that, and this goes back to Haley's point. They say that a stranger doesn't do that. The amount of times that Betsy was stabbed repeatedly implies that the person who did this knew her, and then this crime was extremely personal. Now, true crimers, mm-hmm. you and I both know, or all know, where this is heading. The police are starting to form a theory, and they're honing in on
that it's Russ.
Russ as a person of interest. Yeah.
Yep. So you're most likely to be killed the person closest to you. Like, Drew is most likely to murder you, and Connor is most likely to murder me, and vice versa. Connor's more likely going to, you know,
that's,
if he were to get murdered, probably by
as
me.
As sadly as that's true, it's the theory that the police are going with, and... We'll get into it very shortly.
But obviously, because we're here on our woman-only podcast, we know it's not Russ.
Yeah, he could have been an accomplice. You don't know. If you don't know about this case, she could have been an accomplice.
That's true.
As a part of their investigation, the police also questioned friends and family. Now, Betsy's mom said that Betsy and Russ's marriage was actually really great. He had been a thoughtful and a devoted son-in-law, and in her mind, it wasn't really possible that Russ could have done something like this. And according to the Dateline episodes that I had referenced, Betsy's mom even goes as far as saying that after Betsy's murder, it was like she lost two people. She lost her daughter and she lost her son-in-law, Russ, that she was really close to.
Mm.
This is where
yeah.
we meet Pam Hupp. She introduces herself as someone who saw Betsy every day. Betsy and Pam met in 2001 at the State Farm offices where Betsy also worked, and so did Pam. Pam was 10 years older than Betsy, and they were very different people. Betsy was warm and jovial, and Pam was super serious. But despite their differences, they had formed a friendship, and even though they had gotten out of touch here and there, Betsy had started spending a lot more time with Pam after her cancer diagnosis in 2010.
Wait, how old are Betsy and Pam?
So Betsy was born in 1969, and Pam's 10 years older than her. So I'm assuming she's born in the 1959 or 58, something like that. So Pam tells the police that she was Betsy's best friend. Fact, Pam Hupp is also the friend who drove Betsy home from chemo the night that she was murdered, which also makes Pam Hupp the last person to see Betsy alive. But mm-hmm. we're going to move past which that for now and go back to the interrogation. Pam tells the police that Russ sucked and was very degrading to Betsy. She said, I quote, he made comments about how much money he will have after she's gone and that she has life insurance on her. Sorry, that he has life insurance on her and that he will be able to buy back the house, etc. End quote. In short, she basically points the finger directly at Russ Faria and says that he was super insensitive about Betsy's cancer and looked at it as if her death couldn't come any sooner and that he would end up richer because of it. This is one of the other points.
Not looking good, Russ. Yeah. Not looking good.
This is one of the other points she makes, is that Russ didn't care about Betsy and that instead of driving his wife to and from chemo, Pam was doing it and Russ was out playing games with his friends. So the question the police are asking themselves at this point is, could Russ have murdered Betsy? And according to Pam Hupp, abso-fucking-lutely. According to Pam, Betsy was planning on leaving Russ because she was tired of his attitude towards her and that Betsy and one of her girlfriend had actually gone to Branson, Missouri for a fun week before her death, where both Betsy and this girlfriend of hers were planning to escape from their husbands. So now Pam tells her, has basically told the police that Russ has an insurance policy out on her, multiple maybe, and that Betsy was probably planning on leaving Russ. So she is handed two very strong motives for Russ to the police.
Can we just call this episode According to Pam?
Yeah, we can. Absolutely can. When the police question Russ about his and Betsy's marriage, he says that they had never talked. They had talked about splitting up 6 years ago, but they had since reconciled and they never ever had any violence between them. So he was essentially just denying all these claims and saying, yes, we talked about splitting up before, but that wasn't the issue now. And, you know, we never ever were violent against each other. I could have never done something like this. Yeah.
Plus, marriage is hard. Like, you know, it comes up every now and again about, is this really the right thing?
It does. And
especially,
that's not,
especially if you've been together for, you know, a long amount of time. And I'm that's sure true. The conversation comes up.
Yeah. And to me, the fact that Russ isn't lying about this hiccup in his marriage with Betsy, I think says a lot. Most people who are trying to hide something would hide something like that. You know, they're not forthright about that information. So the fact that he was saying that, yes, we had problems, our marriage wasn't perfect, but we had moved past that, I think is actually a sign of credibility. But I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Clearly the cops disagreed. So I should mention that the police were interviewing Pam and Russ at the exact same time. So while Pam is bad-mouthing Russ and Betsy's marriage, Russ had absolutely no idea. So the cops decided to test Russ and ask him, because they were like, oh, Pam's giving us all this information, we should like cross-reference this with Russ, right? So they decide to test Russ and ask him about what he knew of Pam. And he says, I quote, she's a good person, very friendly, end quote. The cops ask him specifically if Pam would have had anything bad to say about him. And he says, no. I think this is another sign, personally, like he's clearly not bad mouthing this person, this Pam person, but Pam's going out of her way to like point the finger at Russ. And I think that's a huge red flag. Yeah, I would have questioned this at the very least. Like, yes, Pam could be telling the truth, but at least, you know, cross-reference or check her story out. You can't just like take it at face value. And I think,
take her word.
Yeah, I think they did that. So we'll get through that in a minute. So Russ starts thinking, well, why are they asking me about Pam? And then the light bulb in his head finally goes off. And he remembers that Pam was actually the last person to see Betsy alive because she drove her back home from chemo. But even though he remembers that, Russ tells the cops that there's no way Pam could have done it. Meanwhile, Pam, instead of just saying how horrible Betsy and Russ's marriage was, decides to fuel the fire even more and says that apparently Russ had started to play this game with Betsy where he would put a pillow over her face to help her understand what it would feel like when she was dying. I'm not sure if the police believe this. I mean, if they did, it would only be one of the more idiotic things that they did in this case, other than believing anything that came out of this Pam lady's mouth. But yeah, so obviously
that's very twisted. If somebody even, like, how do you even come up with that?
Well, it's a lie. Also, Russ denies ever doing this. Yeah,
right. Yeah. But just like the idea to come up with a lie that's like that extravagant of like, oh, they come with this game. It's just so weird.
That is not the worst thing in this case, unfortunately. Yeah, it only gets worse. I feel like I have been desensitized from taking notes on this case because of how evil I think Pam is. So, spoiler alert, Pam did it. Okay. Now, going back to the crime scene, this case essentially comes down to one fact for the police, and that was the fact that they found blood on one of Russ's house slippers that was in their bedroom. And I think because the police had such tunnel vision from talking to Pam, they were only looking for clues that would have supported that theory. While in retrospect, when you look at the photos, and there are photos of the living room in some of the sources that I've mentioned, the crime scene was covered, and I mean covered, in blood. And if Russ or anyone had really done it, especially Russ, they wouldn't have found just a drop of blood on his slippers. You know, they would have found a lot.
I think it's just
blood.
I feel like it's just so strange to me that she's terminally ill and they find the need to kill her. Like, she's gonna die anyways.
You'll figure out why. It gets more and more twisted. So yeah, they wouldn't have found blood, just like a drop of blood on his house slippers. They would have found a lot more blood on his clothes and his shoes. And I should make this clear that Russ wasn't wearing his house slippers when he came back home. He was wearing boots because, if you remember, he had just come back from game night with his friends. So
yeah.
And I know that there could have been multiple other reasons, like he could have changed and discarded those clothes and come back, but when questioned by the police, Russ already had four rock solid alibis who corroborated his story of being at game night with his friends. And I'd mentioned that earlier.
Four of his game night friends.
Yeah.
They were all there.
And not to mention, he had also stopped at Arby's on his way back for food. So I'm assuming he had like receipts and there was a camera at Arby's or whatever that they could have checked.
Yeah.
Yeah. The police apparently also had questioned Russ for 48 fucking hours, and he never lawyered up. He just continues to answer their questions for 48 hours. That's a long time. Yeah. That's 2 days, guys. Like,
yeah, because there's something about, like, I mean, I think everybody should get a lawyer, but there's something about, like, asking for a lawyer that makes you feel guilty, I guess.
That's exactly. I have a note on my notes saying, side note, I know lawyering up can make you look sketch, but people often forget that this is one of your rights for a very good reason. It's literally listed in your Miranda rights. So even if you think it's going to make you look sketch, if you're talking to the police about something, anything, sometimes I feel like lawyering up is a good way to
go. Just know that, like, even if you're innocent and you maybe you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, like, there's innocent people behind bars.
Yeah.
There's innocent exactly people on I'm death saying. Row.
Yeah. You know? This is it's a like, perfect example. That's exactly what I'm saying is I'm not saying that murderers and criminals should get lawyers, like be as dumb as I'm saying that you always are.
Yeah.
But for the innocent people, like Haley said, who are sometimes convicted because they're at the wrong place at the wrong time, it's always good to get a lawyer, I feel.
So
like.
We need to get shirts made that says, be dumb, please.
Be dumb if you're garbage. But if you're innocent, right. Then lawyer up. Something like that.
All right, keep going.
Well, so because the media was all over this case and Pam was like basically in every outlet bad-mouthing Russ and Betsy's marriage, poor Betsy's family, they also turn on Ross as well. This made me really sad because now all of a sudden, like, Russ has lost his wife, and I know in retrospect he didn't do it, and all of a sudden everyone has stories about how bad their marriage was and et cetera, and I've already spoiled it for you guys. Russ didn't do it. Pam did, right? So we can empathize with Russ. I feel like he would have been very lonely in this instance. Anyway, so we learned that Betsy,
yeah, it would feel very lonely.
It would, yeah.
I'd almost, too, if so many people believe that you did it, like, especially if it was, like, at night, in the middle of the night. Like, did I sleepwalk and do it? Like, did I do it?
There
like,
you know, is like actually a case where it said while he slept at night, something that Dateline did, where this guy claimed he murdered his wife in cold blood because he was sleepwalking. It's a very interesting one. You should listen to it.
Right. I actually wonder if he was sleepwalking and he did do it, or is he just saying that to, like, maybe lessen his case, or did somebody else kill him and he doesn't know?
No, he's just saying that. I don't remember which okay. way the case goes, but there's a lot of physical evidence suggesting otherwise. There's yeah, no boo. Way he wasn't conscious. Yeah. Anyway, so we learned.
It would be like everyone being like, this apple is red. And you're like, no, the apple's a green apple. And they're like, everybody else is like, no, the apple is red. You would start to think that there's something wrong with your sight. Do you know what I'm saying?
To the point where you're questioning your own judgment, like, oh
yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, that does happen. That's how coerced confessions happen, dude. That's how how a police, like, a police person will like keep someone there for 48 hours, like in this case. And people who aren't smart or tired, or not even not smart, like sometimes you just get so tired and exhausted, you're just like, fine, fuck it, I did it, you know, like, just get me out of this room. And it's so sad. Anyway, so we learned that Betsy had made Pam Hupp the beneficiary of her $150,000 life insurance policy 4 days prior to she got murdered. She apparently had done this because Betsy was concerned about her daughter's well-being after she passed and was concerned that Russ was going to blow all the money away. So she named Pam the beneficiary in the hopes that Pam would make sure the money got to her daughters like she intended. Now, again, this is Pam telling the officers that that's why Betsy named her the beneficiary. So,
okay.
Yeah. Right. So now I don't know why.
According to Pam.
Yeah. And now I don't know why Betsy just didn't name her daughters the beneficiaries. Like, that's unclear to me. Right. Like, that seems dumb. Again, guys, if you just really want to leave money to someone that's not your husband, or like, just write a will and name them instead of naming some random dude and then trusting them to give them.
I mean, you might tell me later, but my guess is that Pam somehow got a hold of that information and did it herself.
No, Betsy actually does do it. Why? We will never know. I guess we will never know. Yeah, I don't know. Pam states that Betsy and her had actually met up at the library to sign all the paperwork, and there actually was a witness who witnessed this happen. There was a clerk standing behind the desk who had witnessed Betsy signing the paperwork in order to do this. So hearing this, the police I think what they thought was that hearing that Betsy had named Pam the beneficiary made him so mad that that's when he killed Betsy. And so this is the last thing that they needed to kind of confirm their theory. So they charge Russ with first degree murder and arrest him 8 days after Betsy was killed. Now, Russ's defense attorney, Joel Schwartz, hears the story and immediately believes Russ's innocence and basically gets right to work. He first goes to the library clerk, who Pam had said was the witness to Betsy signing the insurance paperwork, where she had named Pam the beneficiary. He finds the lady, and the lady apparently tells Joel that Pam was the one in charge and doing all the talking as if changing the beneficiary mm-hmm. was Pam's idea. Betsy was like super quiet and just kind of looked like she was going along with this plan that Pam kept like mm-hmm. badgering into her. So now remember that friend that Pam said that Betsy had gone to Branson, Missouri with a week before she died? Well, mm-hmm, apparently right. to hatch a plan on how to leave their husbands. Well, Joel finds her too. Her name was Linda. And she not only denies that they were ever there ever was such a plan, but also says it was just like a trip for a vacation, you know, to like blow off steam.
So why didn't the cops find these people on
a
question?
Again,
them?
There's a lot of mistakes. They just kind of hone in on Pam's theory and go with it. There's so
they
many
just had
mistakes.
Tunnel vision.
Yeah. They don't even check her story, or they check her story, but they'd already decided on their theory. So they find other things that only support their theory. It's really weird. There's so many instances in this where I feel like the cop and the prosecution had the chance to overturn this and they just didn't. Anyways, they went to the friend just says, we went to the mall, to a Jelly Bean store, where Betsy even told this friend, Linda, that Jelly Beans were Russ's favorite candy. She called him on the phone, even asked him to pick out the candy that he wanted, and that they were planning on eating the candy together once she got home. And this, just side note, was so cute. It melted my heart. Like, it warms my heart to know that that Betsy and Russ at some point had happy times and enjoyed simple pleasures, like enjoying jelly bean candy on the sofa.
Yeah. So
I don't
cute.
Know. I just think it was cute. And the saddest part is this is barely like a week before Betsy gets murdered. So anyways, again, another thing that Pam said that was kind of a lie that they could have just kind of cross-checked, right? And so Joel also asked Linda if Betsy was ever upset about anything at all while they were hanging out in Branson, Missouri. And Linda says that actually she was pretty happy about her life, other than the fact that she seemed really annoyed at her friend Pam. Interesting? Well, it gets weirder. She said that Betsy said over and over again how she was so annoyed at Pam. Just in this short amount of time and doing his due diligence, Joel, the defense attorney, had not only confirmed that Pam was lying about a lot, but he had also made her a less credible source. And I feel like, going back to your point, Haley, if the police had just cross-checked her story, I think this would have been so easy to catch. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, just go sure. cross-reference her story with anyone, literally any other person, and it would have worked. So
frustrating.
So now Joel, the defense attorney, starts putting together a timeline for the day of Betsy's murder. Apparently, Pam had insisted on driving Betsy to her chemo appointment and back that day. And Betsy had told her that, hey, I have a family friend, you know, who's planning on being there with me. And while I'm really thankful that you want to come and spend time with me, I kind of want alone time and one-on-one time with this other friend. And so essentially, in very nice words, Betsy tells Pam to stay away. Guess what this Pam girl does? Shows the fuck up. She just shows up to her chemo appointment uninvited. Like, honestly, I've never heard of anyone doing that. What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like, friends can get crazy and jealous and things like that. You know, that happens every day, all the time. But, like, somebody's dying and you show up to their chemo, like, you are
it's just
psycho.
Bizarre word. Like, this lady has zero redemption qualities about her. I mean, I say that I feel like about every single case we do, but the more and more that we do these cases and the more in depth that I read about these cases, I feel like all these murderers are fucking assholes and that they have zero redemption qualities about themselves. I think the only one that I felt any kind of empathy towards was Eileen Wuornos and Michelle Carter, and Haley hates me for that. Betsy and her friend.
Not Eileen Wuornos. I feel Michelle Carter.
Yeah. So Betsy and her friend's name was Bobby, somehow ditch Pam once she showed up to the chemo appointment and tell her that they have dinner plans, from where Bobby drops Betsy off at Betsy's mom's house. Well, Pam shows up to Betsy's mom's house too. Like, seriously, I feel like Pam was stalking Betsy, which is creepy in its own and it's bizarre. If my friend did this, again, I would definitely think it's weird and definitely tell them to fuck off. But yet again, people nicer than me, what does Betsy do? She gives in and she's like, fine, give me a ride home. Whatever. We'll talk and spend time. So Pam gives her a ride home, and that was the last time anyone saw Betsy alive. I mean, Pam was relentless about wanting to drive her to chemo from chemo. You know, if I was a telling person, I think she wanted to kill her or something.
I was going to say, in her head, she probably had this day like, planned, you know, I'm going to drive her to chemo and back. And then, you know, Betsy threw a curveball in it and she's like, nope, this is still happening.
Yeah.
So which
dumb. Also, it's just bizarre. Like, just 4 days after she named you the beneficiary, like, how the fuck do you think you were going to get away with this? But she does. She does for a very long time. Anyways, so Pam and Betsy leave Betsy's mom house at 6:30 p.m. Remember, Joel's still putting together a timeline, right? So he discovers Pam and Betsy leave Betsy's mom's house at 6:30 p.m. They would have gotten to Betsy's place at around a little after 7. At 7:04 p.m., there's a call from Pam's phone to Pam's husband. And during that call, Betsy is actually alive and even gets on the phone. At 7:21 p.m., there's a call from Betsy's daughter to Betsy's phone that goes unanswered. At 7:26 p.m., there's another call to Betsy's phone that goes unanswered. And then at 7:27 p.m., there's a call from Pam's phone to Betsy's phone that is also unanswered. Now, Pam claims that she was allegedly calling Betsy at 7:27 p.m. to let her know that she had gotten home safe.
Mm-hmm.
Joel, Russ's lawyer, claims that that is impossible. Pam couldn't have driven home from Betsy's that fast, to which Pam says, well, I wasn't really home. I was mostly home. What? What does that even mean? Like, what does mostly home mean? Like, why would I pick up the phone halfway to my place and be like, hey, Haley, I think I made it home, but not just yet. I'll call you back in another 15 to let you
You're either home or you're not fucking home. Like, is your foot in the first in the front door or is it not in the front door?
It is so bizarre. Anyways, so Joel thought So Joel had been a step ahead of Pam and he'd already pulled Pam's cell phone records and actually challenges her and says Pam's phone at the time that she is saying that she was almost home actually pinged at a tower that was only 3 miles from Betsy's house. So that is as far as Pam could have been, if not standing in like Betsy's home, because I'm assuming that ping is not like super accurate. It's probably accurate within some radius and it was like a 3 mile radius or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I am almost home call is probably like a blatant lie.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's 2013, 2 years after Betsy's death and Russ's trial is beginning. Yeah. Yep. And Russ's trial is about to begin.
I don't know. Has he been sitting in jail or has he been not sitting in jail?
You know, I don't know. I didn't really read about that because... Or if I did hear it on one of the episodes and on Dateline, I honestly just don't remember. So I'll look it up later and let you guys know.
Okay.
So Joel in the trial, other than all the findings we had already just mentioned, also goes as far as to research that the insurance money that Pam had got, the $150,000, she never gave a dime of that money to any of Betsy's daughters. And worse is...
Surprise.
Yeah, so when the trial starts, the police actually start coaching her. They're like, girl, you haven't given any of this money to Betsy's daughters. And based on your own account, Betsy gave you this money so you could make sure it got to her daughters. And defense is going to hone in on this and it makes you look bad. Can you just like give them this money and set up a trust in their name? And she goes, yep. And to her credit, she actually does set up a trust for the daughters so that they can get this money. And she puts 2/3 of the money in there. Not all of it, just 2/3 of the money into that trust. Well,
how much is it for again?
$150,000. Mm. So, well, the judge says to Joel that, yeah, this is all great and all, but you can bring up this money stuff in court because he reminds him that it's Russ on trial and not Pam. And no matter like how shady this makes Pam look, it's not admissible in court.
So annoying.
Yeah, I hate it all. I hate it all.
You have to just focus on Russ and how he's innocent, but not how somebody else is guilty, which.
Yeah.
Yes, I get it. But it's so fucking annoying.
It is. I literally have in my notes. Ugh, I hate this all. Yeah. ! So Joel brings in all of Russ's friends who were at game night with him to corroborate his alibi. Remember that I said that the blood was almost black when Russ had found Betsy? Mm-hmm. That means that the blood was sitting there for a while, and the forensic experts did determine that rigor mortis had set in by the time that Russ found her, and that Betsy's time of death was probably around 7 p.m., which is when all of Russ's friends were claiming, like they say that he was sitting right in front of them at game night. And this is also around the time that Pam was dropping Betsy off. The medical examiner also says that a lot of those 55 stab wounds were done post-mortem. Some idiot or pathetic person stabbed her after she had died. And the reason they know this is because a lot of those gashes that I was talking about on her wrist, they never bled. There was no blood oozing out of those wounds. They were just
so
gashes.
Gnarly. Like, why? You already killed the person. Why do you gotta like keep tormenting their body? God, people are psycho.
So they were all staged. It's just very odd that someone did that. And so they were all staged.
I hate people. And this just makes me like really want to be really very, very, very careful who I'm friends with.
This one for sure. Yeah. So remember the prosecution's big smoking gun against Russ was that his slippers that were in the closet had this like drop of blood. Mm-hmm. Well, Joel says that they were there, that the blood was there because it was staged. And he even explains that there were no footprints in the blood or around this crime scene, and that there's no way Russ could have avoided blood everywhere but left a speck on his like slipper that was in the bedroom. It like makes no sense. Like, this is clearly staged.
Yeah.
So after all that, Russ actually, even though Joe thought there was no way he was going to get charged, he does. The jury comes back and says, nope, he did it. And he gets life, Haley. He gets life. After all of this fucking evidence, he gets life.
So frustrating.
Russ is devastated, and so is his defense attorney, Joel. I thought this was really funny.
Russ might not have been, like, very convincing on the stand. Like, maybe he wasn't, like, maybe he was like, no, I totally got this. I'm getting out. It doesn't matter. I know, but with the jury.
I will never be on a jury because I am too smart.
Jury's all about, like, showing emotions and shit.
Well, we're going to get into that later, too. So Russ continues to maintain his innocence. And in 2014, Betsy's daughters actually file a lawsuit against Pam because despite filling the trust, they never got any money from that trust. It turns out that right after the trial, Pam had actually emptied the trust out and paid herself the entire sum of money.
Mm.
So again, why didn't Betsy just leave it all to her daughters? So now it becomes super clear to Joel, like 2 years, 3 years later, that Pam actually did it, and she did it for the money. So Joel files a special motion with the special appeals court, and hallelujah, this judge who reads this appeal grants Russ and Joel the motion. They actually get a new trial. That's essentially what's happening here. He files a motion and says, Russ had a mistrial and we need to try this case again. There's so much evidence against him. And usually these never get approved, but the judge looks at this one and goes, yeah, we need to look at this again.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure, we need to look at this again. So now this is where I'm going to rant about the justice system for a little bit because it irked me. Leah Askey is the prosecutor who prosecuted Russ's case, and she absolutely fucking sucks. I mean, there is video and audio of Leah Askey and Pam like talking about how Russ got this motion granted and he's so annoying and that his feelings are hurt and this is all about just saving face. I mean, this is the prosecution attorney. Like, your job should be to represent
to find the
Betsy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your job should be to be the voice of the victims, not to stand behind whatever it is that your first theory was, you know. And the
I hope
fact
she got
that you
fired.
Just, she didn't. I'll just tell you. She doesn't get fired, but she does have to like.
Where the podcast is spoiler alerts.
Yeah. She does step down and someone else comes in place, and we'll talk about that in a little
that's,
bit.
That's like, hey, you're fired. So here's your option. If you want retirement, you got to step down.
I hope she'd got no golden parachute. Anyways, I mean, I think that's just shameful. The fact that you're sitting there and 3 years later, when clearly a judge looked at this case and goes like, I think you guys made some mistakes here. She's sitting there and going and standing firm on her guns like, no, we caught the right person. You know, let me go even a step further and talk to Pam about it a little bit more and vent about what I think about this case to potentially the person who must have done it. Like, it's just insane to me.
Like, I understand, like, standing by your decision, because I would hope that if you make that decision, you're 100% in your mind think that you got the right person. But to go gossip about it with somebody else that's a part of this case is, like, crazy to me.
Not just gossip. Like, can you just Did you ask her if she ever gave the money back to the daughters? Mm-hmm. Did you? Because if you had just asked that question, either she's deliberately not asking that question, or she knows the answer to that question and just doesn't want to deal with it. And like I said, she just wants to stick by her conviction of like, Russ is guilty. I convicted him and I just want to move forward that like, I don't want to do this again and admit that I'm wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it's just stupid. Anyway, so Russ is granted a new trial. It begins in November of 2015. Everyone on Russ's side is like absolutely stoked. Pam, as a result of this trial, is re-interviewed this time. And this time she changes her entire fucking story. She wasn't just Betsy's best friend. She claims that her and Betsy were,
lovers.
Yep. She said, I quote, "I replaced what a husband would have been. It's honestly a relationship with two women who were not attracted to women. I don't know how to explain it," end quote. She also frames Russ as a monster. She claims that he had found out about their relationship. I'm using quotes because you guys can't see me. And that he was homophobic, and that when he learned of Betsy and Pam's relationship, he threatened Pam and told her never to come over. She also uses some very terrible words that I'm not going to repeat. But remember, poor Russ said that she was a nice lady. I bet that when he's re-looking at these interviews, he's like, what the fuck? I think Pam's horrible.
Yeah, like, yeah. He's just a good guy. Poor guy.
Exactly. Anyways, I don't know if he's a good guy or not, but he definitely didn't kill his wife. So for those wondering, none of this was the truth about Betsy and Pam being lovers. Like everything else, she was making this up again. And this time, thankfully, no one falls for it. For the second trial, Russ picks a bench trial. So now if you remember this from Michelle Carter's case that we covered, bench trial just means that there will be, thank God, no jurors. And all of it hinges on a judge.
Just
and I
evidence.
Think this is great because jurors are emotional and stupid sometimes. And I'm sorry if you were on the jury the first time for Russ's case, but you guys all clearly made the wrong decision and convicted the wrong guy. So I am totally for this. I was for this in Michelle's case, and I'm for this in Russ's case.
Yeah, I'm definitely like all about evidence, but I also think some judges are paid off and crooked. So it's just one of those things, but keep going.
Ooh. Okay.
What was that about? You don't agree
with
me?
Bum. No, not that I don't agree with you. I just had never thought about it. So prosecution obviously goes first. They claim to have new evidence all of a sudden. They bring in a cop who said that he remembered seeing droplets of blood in the bathtub, which indicated to them that Russ had potentially been cleaning up. Again, there was never a report filed about this finding. I'm literally like, I think to my horror, they're actually making the cops lie in order to make it seem like their theory was substantiated when it clearly wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that blows my mind. Again, the prosecution has no incentive to lie. Your entire job should be to represent Betsy Faria in this case, and you're just sitting there representing your win. It just infuriates me. Anyway, so Leah Askey also introduces this letter that they had found on Betsy's computer. Again, I'm using quote, that she wrote to Pam but never hit send. The letter said that Betsy was scared to go back home and that she's telling Pam in that letter that Russ had started to put pillows over her head to show her how she would feel when she died, blah, 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 blah. Joel is able to get the letter examined. Joel, remember, is a defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He basically is like, oh, it's part of my discovery, right? So he gets the letter examined by computer experts who determined that the letter had never even been typed on that computer. It was typed on a different computer and then later uploaded to Betsy's computer digitally. Shocking. Like, tampering of evidence. So I don't know if the prosecution, Leah Askey girl, like tried to look into this, just ignored it. I don't know. This is just really shady. It makes the justice system just look really fucking bad. Other than the defense attorney, who usually I don't like defense attorneys, but in this case, I actually really like the defense attorney. He's like doing his job perfectly. So the judge deliberates.
Well, defense attorneys that like take on cases that are obviously where they're like this person obviously murdered people. Like, you're just doing it for the money. And that makes you look bad, to my opinion.
Well, I mean, everyone's entitled to an attorney. So I understand that everyone's entitled to it. At some point, defense attorneys are just really good at their job. And it is a job, as bad as it would be. But
right.
There is still a moral side of it. And in this case,
I know friends who have like DUIs and things like that, and attorneys are like, not taking it. Nope, there's no way you're getting off on that. I'm good. So
sometimes there isn't, but I mean, everyone is entitled to still an attorney. So I
just think about it. Ted Bundy had an attorney.
No, so, he had represented himself. He actually fired
his attorneys. That's right. I forgot. But he had one at one point and fired him.
He did have one. And they were actually, if you watch the Netflix documentary Confessions of Ted Bundy on a tape or whatever, I forget what it's called, they actually talk about how frustrated they were with Ted Bundy because they kept trying to tell him about a defense. And he was like, no, I'm much smarter, because obviously he was a psychopath and narcissistic. And he was like, no, I can do this better. And so he represents himself and fires them. It's crazy. Anyways, I do think everyone deserves an attorney. It's possible that, you know, when it's in your rights, when if you can't find an attorney, you'll appoint one, two, for you, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it is good. It's a good system because you should be innocent until proven guilty. I'm just making the simple observation that I think Joel Schwartz is really good here.
I would be so sick to my stomach, though, if I had to be an attorney for someone who is guilty. Like someone who, you know, either like killed a kid or, you know, something like that. Like, it would make me sick trying to get that person off.
It is, but
I couldn't sleep at night. That's why I just don't do that job. Anyways, keep going. Yeah.
And that's why I don't. I agree with you. I wouldn't either. And I would. Yeah, I'm glad someone else does it. But that's why they have a bar, because they also can't represent them not correctly, because then they would lose their license. But
true.
Yeah. Anyway, so the judge deliberates and determines that Russ isn't guilty, and Russ is set free. The prosecution also is like huffing and puffing about this. They refuse to reopen the case, which just makes me sadder, because clearly the judge looked at this case and was like, you clearly convicted the wrong guy. And he even says, like, this raises questions about the case. You guys should reopen the case. And the prosecution says, nope, we still think Russ is the right killer. The judgment is just wrong. We're not going to reopen the case. Also, to make matters worse, the daughters who had filed the case against Pam for the money, they lose the case. Because legally, in the paperwork, Betsy had never named the daughters. So Pam was entitled to all of the money. It doesn't matter what Betsy told her in her ears, shook her hand on.
Right. That's so annoying.
It's so sad. And also, like, again, I don't understand why Betsy just didn't name her daughters. I still don't get that. It could have just avoided this entire thing. Anyways, so Pam wins that case as well, and she gets away with murder, is what we think. Anyways, this is the part where you would think I'm like, oh, this is it, guys. Case is over. No, it's not over. Pam is fucking worse, and there's more. So it's now August of 2016, and there is another 911 call back in Missouri. And guess who it is? It's fucking Pam Hupp. She's claiming that someone broke into her house. Honestly, you guys can go even listen to this 911 call on some of the Dateline episodes, and it sounds so fake. Honestly, I'm not making this up. It literally sounds like this. Someone picks up the phone, and then Pam goes, yeah, hello, hi, yes, someone's trying to break into my house and rob me. Like, that's literally what it sounds like. It's so dumb. Anyways, and so we hear a guy in the background saying something, and then you hear six gunshots, boom, 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 you know. And so Pam claims, not spoiler alert because I keep saying that, but she shot this guy. Okay, the guy that she claimed was robbing her, she shot him. And she claims that she was just sitting in her driveway when this guy came up to her with a gun and tried to rob her. Long story short, she's claiming that Russ sent this
she
guy
shot to- Russ.
No, she no, saw, okay. shot this guy who she's claiming Russ sent this guy to kill her and get the insurance money that Betsy had left her. And so she killed this guy, this random dude who we don't know the identity of just yet, in self-defense. Just take a moment.
No, I get it. Yeah, no. Picture so how fucking, dumb this is. She Russ just killed just somebody was, innocently. Because
and then blames Russ, who literally
cover up
just came out of jail and was like, said, no, you didn't do this murder. And he's like ecstatic, living his life in freedom again. And she's like, no, he sent this guy to kill me, a guy who just got his freedom back. It's so dumb. Anyways, so while investigating this case, they find a note in this guy's pocket, a handwritten note. And it basically had a checklist of things to do. And literally read, one, get Hupp in car to take to bank. Two, get Russ's money, should be about $100,000 to $150,000. Three, bring Hupp back to house and dispose of her body and make it look like Russ's wife's murder with a knife or something like that.
It's so fucking stupid. It's so stupid. It is. What kind of person makes if someone was really gonna kidnap you, you think they have a written checklist of things
Pam
they have to do?
Pam is the fucking epitome of dumbest people who have committed crimes. I feel like more of you should do this, be dumb, and commit crimes so we can catch you. Just, I wish the justice system was better and she didn't get away for that long.
Yeah, that's stupid. Because now somebody else is dead because they sucked.
Yeah. So anyways, Russ hears about this and he's obviously completely cooperative. He's even like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. Please take my DNA. So anything that I can do to prove my innocence, do it. Like, I'll take a polygraph test, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and they clear him. They're like, yeah, you didn't do it. So now back to this lame investigation. The police go back to the 911 call. And if you've listened to our other episodes, I actually do mention this. When you call 911, the recording of the call starts before the operator picks up. My mind is still blown. Like, I already knew this fact, but my mind is blown every single time I think about this fact. Think about, like, dialing 911. You think the recording will start when someone on the other end says hello? No, it actually starts the moment you hit send. In this call, the police say that they should have been able to hear a commotion, some kind of struggle between Pam and this guy before the operator picked up. Nope, nothing. There was silence. Nothing. There was none of that. It's like the operator picked up the phone and someone said action, and that's when Pam started this fake-ass fucking 911 call.
Yeah, because that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. They also find that in Pam's house, there was a random piece of carpet just like laid out in this random area of her house. The police describe it as if like someone had perfectly placed it there in anticipation of this event happening, so that when Pam shot and killed the guy, her actual carpet wouldn't get dirty.
Oh yeah.
She literally put guys a rag on the floor before she shot the guy and left him there. It's insane to me. So I've already said this, but Pam is literally the dumbest or the dumbest one out there. And we find out that the guy that had been killed was Louis Gumpfenberger. He was 33 years old and had brain damage from an earlier car accident. He lived with his mom. He couldn't even run. He had such severe damage. Like, he was capable of doing nothing. It was sad.
That's poor guy.
Yeah. So looking into this further, the police realized that 6 days before Pam's 911 call in this incident, they actually got a 911 call from a woman called Carol saying that this random woman in the neighborhood was driving around pretending to be from Dateline, and she was trying to recruit someone to record.
Kind of funny that Pam is pretending to be Dateline when Dateline actually does a story on her. But
yeah, it's funny. Keith actually talks about Pam stealing their identity, their show's identity. Like, he's like super upset. Keith Morrison. Like, it's Keith Morrison. He's the one who like hosts the show. He's the narrator. He's like, just so you guys know, we never do this. We never like offer people cash to record sound bites. Like, he actually defends Dateline, the show. He's like, we never do this, guys. We never do this. Anyway, so Carol claims that there was this random woman going around, driving around their neighborhood, asking people to get in her car because she was from Dateline and she needed to record a sound bite. And in return, she would pay them $1,000 cash up front, but it would be cash because she doesn't want a paper trail. Again, dumbest and dumbest of y'all. So Carol amuses her and agrees to go along with it. But this random woman then says that she can get in her car, but Carol can't bring her phone, keys, or wallet or anything because her producer doesn't like clutter. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, like, at least say you can't bring your phone because you can't record when I'm recording.
Yeah.
Like, what?
For real. Anyway, so Carol still goes along with it and gets in the car. And then 30 seconds later, she's like, no, this is creepy vibes. I'm out of the car. And then she calls the cops immediately. Smart in this case, Carol actually had security cameras, and so the security cameras get the license plate of this woman who was driving around doing this, and lo and behold, who do you think it is? Pam.
Yeah.
Yep. So long again, she actually tried a bunch of other people in that same neighborhood until she finally landed on this poor guy Luis, who had brain damage, and he agreed to do it. And the entire time she had told him what to say, when to say it. And so he did. And then Pam shoots him 6 times. Poor guy probably thought that he was like getting paid to do something for Dateline and instead died not knowing that it was even coming. Yeah, it's really, really messed up. I mean, Pam not only at this point has killed her apparently best friend slash lover that she claims, but she pretty much brought this innocent, like, brain damaged guy who was living with his mom for no reason and then took his life as well. It, like, makes me absolutely furious. Anyways, to lock this in further, the computer experts are like, okay, well, we have to prove that Pam staged this, right? If we can't prove it, it's all circumstantial. So they bring in a computer expert, and they're able, this computer expert is able to get Pam's phone location history that day. And he actually pulls up all the pings and then plots them on Google Earth. And he's like, oh my God, she's so dumb that I can literally see what she did in all of her day. It's a map of the crime itself. It shows that because on one of the pings on her location history was Louis Gumpfenberger's apartment. And so they pull the security camera footage from a bakery across from his apartment, and you can see Pam pull up to his apartment, he gets in the car with her, and then she drives off. It's insane. She's basically driving him to his death. And it's so freaking evil. I can't even comprehend that she did this to
another person.
Yeah,
she basically did it for like zero motive.
Nothing. Yeah.
It's like to cover up something, like all you, yeah, whatever. I don't want to.
She'd already gotten away. Yeah. Like, it doesn't even, it's so bizarre. Anyway, so in June 2019, they offer Pam an Alford plea. So if you don't know what an Alford plea is, it's when the person who committed the crime agrees to accept the charges without admitting guilt. Essentially, they're saying, you have too much evidence against me. I don't want this to go to trial. I'm just going to take whatever you give to me. And so she takes the Alford plea, and she gets life without the possibility of parole plus 30 years. In July 2021, there's a new prosecution office. They replaced Leah Askey, to Haley's note earlier.
Thank God.
Yeah, and they reopen Betsy's case, and they also try Pam Hupp for her own mother's murder. Guys, she murdered her own fucking mother 2 years after she had killed Betsy. She pushed her own mother off the third floor balcony of her own assisted living home to get her insurance money.
Why?
She wanted insurance money from her mom. Yeah, $500,000 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fucking awful. There's like no redemption here for Pam. So Pam is in jail today serving her life sentence like she rightly should. Mike Wood, who replaced Leah Askey, filed for murder charges against Pam for Betsy's murder and is actually seeking the death penalty this time.
Yeah, she should. Obviously, she does shit for no fucking reason. She should.
Yeah. I mean, she's already in jail, so who cares? And then he also launched an investigation for prosecutorial misconduct against Russ Faria, which means Leah Askey's probably going to be going to trial as well for why she continued to accuse
Good.
Russ of
criminal.
These things.
Remember when I was saying that story about the girls that were like fighting off a guy that was robbing them, and yeah, they called them dispatcher. The dispatcher was like, no, I'm not sending anyone, basically, even though they called five times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Criminal.
Yeah. And that's it, folks. That was my story. Super fresh.
I think it was a good, though. I mean, not the crimes, but just the story was good. You did a good job telling it. So thanks for that.
Oh, thanks, Haley. Yeah, I think it was a good story to do, but I still do feel sad that someone got away with such horrible things for so long.
And somebody else went to jail for it for probably a couple years.
I think he was in jail for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's the nuts.
He got convicted in 2-3 years. I think 2-3 years. Yeah,
still 2 years of your life.
Yeah, no, it's not great. So that sucks.
Yeah,
but anyways, that's it, guys. So listen to all my sources. There's a lot on this case. The Dateline episodes.
Netflix documentary.
My favorite podcast, True Crime Obsessed, did an episode on the Dateline episodes. There's a Netflix documentary. There's also just tons of sources that I'm going to list in my in the episode's bio. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed.
See you next week.
Have a good one.
Yeah, see you next week with a drink in hand.
Don't let the murder thoughts bite. Bye, guys.